Hello, Soda Nerds. Welcome to a very special, in capital letters, episode of Club Soderbergh. You may have just finished listening to us talk about Ocean's 11 and Full Frontal. If you haven't, go back now. So today's episode is a little addendum as dum-da-da-dum-dum-dum-dum. A new Soderbergh film has come out whilst we've been doing the show. Here is a clip.
Only God knows anything about blowing up real bank vaults is Joe Bang.
Joe Bang? That's a legend right there. You know where he is.
No, I know where he is. We can't do it without him.
This is a surprise.
What you say there, Joe Bang? Ain't seen you in a while. How goes it?
Well, I'm sitting on this side of the table wearing a onesie. How do you think it's going?
Well, you look good.
Real good. Fit.
It's been 4 years since we had a new film from our director, and Logan Lucky didn't leave us disappointed. Set in West Virginia and North Carolina, it's easy to see why Soderbergh was so drawn to doing this film. It's set in the South. It's a crime caper centered around two sets of brothers, a prison break masked by a prison riot, and a robbery at the most southern event of the year, the NASCAR Coca-Cola 600 race. Jimmy Logan, played by Channing Tatum, teams up with his one-armed brother Clyde, or one-handed brother Clyde, Adam Driver, and sister Melly, played by Riley Keough, to rob the Charlotte Motor Speedway in North Carolina. Jimmy also recruits demolition expert Joe Bang and family to help them break into the track's underground system, another Soderbergh casting wildcard using Daniel Craig. Hilarity ensues, but of course there's some tender moments and subplots surrounding Logan's little girl and his family life. I have to say I was really excited about this film, but primarily I wanted to see what all this time off had done to him. The most surprising thing for me was the casting. All these actors who had come up in the time that he'd been doing other work. It was really interesting to see who he likes and what he wanted to do with them. There was a lot of hits and misses in this for me. There were more bad accents than good, some weird casting choices and some plainly wooden acting, maybe down to the casting choices. But there was so much to love, and once I settled into the film in the first 10 minutes, the whole 2 hours went by in a blink of an eye. That was what watching movies was like for me as a kid. I pretty much hate going to the cinema now, so this was just a joyful experience. So my questions to you would be, would you have loved Matt Berry or Steve Coogan in the role of the British sports drink asshole better? And who would you have cast for the ex-wife, or did you love Katie Holmes?
I think Steve Coogan is an amazing idea.
Yeah, that would have been,
because that guy with the curly hair was a bit of a caricature, massive caricature. And a bit too over the top. So I think Steve Coogan would have done that beautifully. So you should be Steven Soderbergh's casting director, Carla. And I think Katie Holmes was a great choice because
I think
she's so tired and we know why, and she was perfect for this role.
I thought she was good too. I didn't really have a problem with her. I guess at first, when she first comes on screen, you just register that, oh, it's Katie Holmes, and all of that information that you have in the file just floods in. Mm. But I feel like she got past that, you know, I feel like she really played the role, and it, I feel like all of the characters kind of start out as caricatures. Like, I feel like intentionally he sets them up as these kind of, you know, southern hicks. And then over the course of the film, this really beautiful thing happens that they're all given their own storylines, they're all given their own space, they're all kind of proven not to be what you thought they were going to be. So I feel like even in her character, when you first meet her, she's kind of like the bitch ex-wife, and she's, you know, in this tacky house and, you know, tacky American life. But then by the end, there's more flesh on the bones. Like, yeah, so I don't know. I did think there was, you know, I did think the energy drink rep or whatever was badly cast, badly thought out, but that was the only bum note for me.
Okay.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it too. It was a very joyful, fun experience. I don't know if that's just because I don't get out a lot. But, and also I think it's because we've been doing this show So it is so exciting to go see a new Soderbergh film, and I think this is what we'll be treated to in the coming years as well. I don't know, it's weird because I did enjoy it so much, but on reflection I was thinking, is this a love letter to Trump's America, this film? Like, I know he comes from the South, it's about his own, you know, like...
His people,
but it's also very much, you know, particularly like the heist, as a heist genre, people who are, you know, disenfranchised and who've come back from war. It feels, I mean, as a heist film, it's much more closely related to that 1950s kind of heist tradition, but where they really were about people who are completely disenfranchised and, you know, trying to find their purpose and their, you know, trying to find their way in society. And this definitely has more of that. Not a very deep film, by the way. It's quite, you know, so no, I'm reading a lot into it.
But. No, I don't think you're reading a lot into it. I think it would be impossible to watch that film and not think that the phrase Trump's America.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's deliberate. Yeah. But I think that, I don't think it's a love letter to Trump's America. I think that he's trying to depict the South in a way that's, like, got the rose-coloured glasses taken off. So I feel like, you know, there's very much a humanisation of these characters that start out as caricatures.
Yeah.
But also there is, you know, a critique of them as well, you know, and the lifestyle and the kind of excesses of American culture are not... I don't think he's elevating them. I think he's saying, you know, it is disgusting. Like, American culture is pretty disgusting. Like, you know, all the stuff with the little girl in the beauty contest.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, you know, you're meant to sympathise with these characters and also at the same time be able to be disgusted by some of the things that they do, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting, like, because it's not a political film necessarily.
Because it's kind of like don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah.
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 The other thing, that, I mean, about the caricatures that kind of interested me was that they could come very close to being quite menacing. Like Daniel Craig's character is, you know, quite sexually menacing. The Hick brothers, quite racially menacing. You know, like they could be, I mean, I guess because of the caricatures that we see on film, but he never goes there. It's almost like a bit of a Disneyfication of that kind of...
I don't know if it's Disneyfication, you know, or if you're meant to feel a little bit of that, you know, that this is what is at stake in America, that this is the precipice that they're sort of sitting on, is that...
Yeah, and I also think one of the main messages is like don't underestimate people who have nothing.
Yeah.
You know, because
absolutely,
it's like a MacGyver type, you know, heist where it's like they just do it with some non-salt. What, I don't know if
you want the bomb
non-salt
scene.
Salt and some candy rocks or something like that. You know,
that was so good, that scene
where it's like
doing the thing on the wall, writing out the chemical.
And I think that there was a lot of tropisms in this as well, like that whole scene, as you said, with the writing out the, this is how it works, you know, like, what do they call it, competence porn or something like that? You know, there's always in these movies, there's always a scene where someone describes exactly how they're going to do the thing they're going to do and everyone's like, wow.
Yeah.
And he has this, Channing Tatum has this big cardboard kind of map of the NASCAR, you know, like model, and he brings it, puts it on the coffee table.
So good. It was interesting to me watching it so close to Ocean's 11 because
big time.
It's not just an homage, it's basically a remake. Like it's, not so much in terms of the details of the plot or the characters, but in terms of the beats of the film, it is exactly the same. Like it's that, you know, it's that kind of, all of these little fragments of information that you get, you know, in the first two thirds, and then all of a sudden it kind of coalesces at the end.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's exactly the same structure. Even that list that Channing Tatum has on the wall of like, and that they're directly pulled from
Ocean's
11.
Yeah.
The rules of what, how to pull off a heist.
Well, and even Ocean's 11 is mentioned.
Yeah.
In the film.
Yeah.
Ocean's 7-Eleven.
That's right. Yeah.
But I enjoyed this movie so much more than Ocean's 11. Even though it is just as neat and perfect as Ocean's 11, like every single subplot is, you know, it's like you can envisage it as a matrix, the narrative and how everything just like lines up and everything is concluded. But I just felt this had so much more, I don't want to say authenticity, it's such an overused word, but love, or I don't know, what do you guys think?
Absolutely, like I just love, you know, like I think the relationship between Channing Tatum and his daughter is really gorgeous.
Channing Tatum's just
he's gorgeous.
Just wonderful.
Stop
he
it
is, gorgeous man.
And he's so underrated. Like he's
a great
I don't know
actor.
If he's like we just couldn't stop looking at the body before, and now we have to look at the face. But he's such a good actor.
He is a good actor. Yeah.
That was my biggest revelation walking away from.
And subtle. Well cast, you so know, subtle. Like really well cast in that role. It just suited him down to the ground, like the ex, you know, football star who's sort of, you know, fallen on hard times.
Yeah.
Another big difference for me and why I enjoyed it so much is I think it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting just to see kind of all of his interests in like primary colours and natural light and how he can utilise all of those things with HD video. It's so crisp and clean and everything in the film is so kind of just pops like electricity. And also I think, you know, one of the things that filmmakers and, you know, TV producers hate about HD is like the level of detail that it reveals, the texture, which, you know, in film it falls away. But in this, it's used so well because you see everyone's, you know, pancake makeup and acne scars and like all the textures in this film are incredible. Like I was so kind of, I thought that was really interesting how he kind of uses that to really give these people some kind of authenticity and
humanity.
Reality. Humanity,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I loved Riley Keough as well. She was great.
She's a dream. Yeah.
She's wonderful.
Dwight Yoakam.
Yes. Yeah. So good.
Awesome.
Yeah. Riley Keough was great, and that's another kind of point of difference was the female characters in this film were so much more interesting and even just like a little detail, like towards the end of the film, they visit, I think it's Adam Driver goes to Melly's house. And just seeing her in her space, it's just really humanizing again. It's sort of like she's not just the kind of I don't know, like visual eye candy or whatever. She has her place and you get to see how she decorates her house. And I don't know, but for some reason that. I was like,
it's touching.
It's touching. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, I don't know, it just adds another dimension to that character as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a Southern girl too by birth.
Well, she's Elvis's granddaughter.
That's right. That's interesting that you say that about the HD because I actually hate everything in HD for all the reasons.
A lot of people do.
It's like too much, man.
Yeah.
But I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Well, I just think it was really integrated and used. It was used for those qualities.
Well, and that's where it has to go, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
I loved it.
Me too.
I never thought about it again. Mm-hmm. But for 2 hours, my brain was completely switched off. And you know.
It's one of those movies. There's another one called In Bruges.
In Bruges.
I think it's one
too.
Of those movies. It's a Christmas movie for me. It's something I'll watch like every year, couple of years. You know, just for fun. That's how I felt about it.
Colin Farrell.
Yeah,
that would be a great. He'd be a great actor for Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He should use, agree. Yeah. There we go. I should be the casting director.
You should be. Oh my god.
What did you think of Daniel Craig? Because he had a bit of a bodge accent as well.
Oh, bad so many accent. Bad accents in this. I honestly don't understand some of the casting decisions. There's no point in getting people to do accents anymore unless they're Australian. All British people doing Americans because apparently Americans can't be in American films anymore. But so many bodge accents. Daniel Craig was passable and I think he was really good as like menacing because he has that such clean cut kind of image as Bond, I guess.
The
so
blue
I thought
eyes
that
and
was
blonde hair and you know.
Yeah.
Kind of
he's played hard men before in
he did
his
look
career.
Like a terrifying white supremacist.
Yeah. He
did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was all right. I liked him, but, you know, he wasn't my favourite.
Elephant in the room has to be Adam Driver.
Yeah. I kind of liked him.
Really?
Really? You thought he was wooden.
Oh, I thought he was terrible.
He's kind of the same
terrible,
in every film, though.
Terrible
like...
accent.
Yeah. That's his thing, just being Adam Driver.
Yeah, that's his shtick.
You know, he's just, yeah.
I love him. Like, I love him in Girls, and I love him as, like, from what I can understand as a person, but it just didn't work in this for me.
I thought he was okay. I thought he was kind of like the weird brother, you know. I don't know. I kind of...
accepted it.
I accepted a bit like Katie Holmes. When I saw him on screen and heard the accent, I was like, oh, yeah, Adam Driver. He does his Adam Driver thing. And then I just forgot about it. And, yeah, I feel like there was enough in the writing and kind of the way it was... you know, his performance as well. For me, I didn't have a problem with it.
The thing that I did love about it, and perhaps I think definitely from the girlfriend experience onwards in his trajectory, is that everybody's a little bit shit and a little bit of a hero in this movie. Like, it's sort of he's moved on to the kind of blended of like, there's bad things and people and good things in people, but mainly it's, you know, good people trying to make do with the shit circumstances that they have. And I think that was a really beautiful humanizing thing about this movie. Like, everyone's a bit yuck, but also
even just the family,
you can relate to them, which is weird, you know, to say about a Hollywood movie.
Even the sort of dynamics in his family of him sort of being on, you know, good terms with his ex-wife and his ex, you know, like, that there's not, you know, heaps of mutual affection there, but it's still, you know, his auntie's still part of their life as well. You know, like, all those kind of details were, like, really nice. That makes it feel real. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Like, no, I think so.
Yeah.
Go see it, people.
Go see it. It's
great. Definitely. Yeah.
Press pause. Press pause.
Press pause.
Well, I've got one that people are saying that Rebecca Blunt, who wrote the script, which we all agree is a great script, doesn't exist. No one knows. Have you guys heard about this? No one really knows who Rebecca Blunt is. Yeah, she doesn't have any profile.
There's kind of this insinuation that it was him wrote
or
it.
His wife,
Jules Asner. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a real kind of inherent sexism to the kind of assumption that it couldn't possibly be this.
Well, I actually just thought when I heard Rebecca Blunt, I thought it was Emily Blunt. I just didn't, you know, and so I was like, wow, she's moved into scripts. That's great. I really liked her in The Devil Wears Prada.
I love Emily Blunt. I have a couple just really interesting in terms of, again, hearkening back to our first episode in terms of his agility and mobility in terms of technology. So they shot this film in 36 days and he had a rough cut done on the last day of shooting. Yeah. And now he talks about things like, you know, if he had his time again with Sex, Lies and Videotape, he'd have it done in 18 days. And there's been also a lot of press, obviously, in interviews and whatnot. And I'm a workaholic, so I think that's also a big thing of what I like about him. But I always hoped that I would, like, mellow out as I got older. But he just said something that completely blew my mind. And he's like, no, as I get older, I realize I have less time, so I have to make more. Mm. And I just find that fascinating. So I think we can, maybe you're right, this podcast will never end. It'll just, especially with him making films in 36 days.
And he might outlive us all, actually.
Yeah. I just wanted to check out that Chan Tate's kind of looks like a World of Warcraft character with that dyed hair. It was just too much.
What colour was his hair dyed?
Black. It was like pretty much black to match Adam Driver.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Ah.
World of Warcraft. I thought it was, it's funny because he also said about coming back to making films that he realised that, you know, no one's hanging around waiting for his next painting. Which I thought was kind of like a nice humble admission that actually this is what I'm good at, this is what I really enjoy, and this is what people want me to do.
But it sounds like his time in TV land really invigorated him. Like you actually hear that from a lot of actors who move from film to go and do TV and stuff, because TV is so fast paced and you have to do so much work in a day. It sounds like that really invigorated him doing the Nick and then the Girlfriend Experience and Mosaic and now apparently a Western as well.
Mm. I think he's just producing that Western.
Okay.
So I looked into that. I don't think he's directly involved. He's not directing it.
But still, production takes a lot of work.
That's true.
Any other Logan Lucky?
Oh, just about the film distribution model.
Yeah, I was going to say the financial structure of it is experimental.
And it didn't work, apparently, which is a bit sad. Like, they didn't quite crack the amount that they needed to for it to work. So go and see it, everybody, because it would be great, because the idea was that basically it bypasses the studio, and instead of them spending heaps of money on marketing the film in the traditional way, which he sees as incredibly wasteful, he's done this thing where he has sold off all the rights to the film in every possible capacity and used that to get it distributed directly into cinemas, and then all of the profit just goes into this bank account and everyone who's involved can just log in to this website and see exactly what percentage of the profits is, you know, available to them.
46% goes to cast and crew, apparently, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's a really nice idea. There are possibly some flaws with it conceptually in that, like, maybe you have to be Steven Soderbergh for that to work to begin with. But I think he was seeing it as more a model that could be available to mid-range directors who are doing kind of art house or, you know,
high... Well, no, I think the idea is not, it's not for art house, it's for people who want to do big, like, mainstream distribution.
Yeah.
But
that's, you know...
But I think to him it's about artistic censorship.
Yeah.
Or artistic freedom, really, more than anything, that he was just, like, so frustrated with the film system. That's the reason why he went on hiatus from it. Yeah. And so it's like he's like, well, if I can do this, then I will make films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only under these conditions, the only conditions that will bring him back, you know.
But I think he had to make 28 or 30 million for it to work, and it's only made 15 so far. So who knows?
So go watch it.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, the 50 people who are listening to this.
I'm sure they've already paid.
Exactly.
So they can go again. Take your friends.
Oh, dear.
Thanks for listening to this little baby addendum episode of Club Soderbergh. We'd love to hear from you and what you thought about Logan Lucky. You can contact the team at club@clubsoderbergh.com, Facebook page Club Soderbergh, and the same for Twitter. Till next month.